Another week, another scandal. Today we find ourselves wondering what is going on today in our world. I'm Ben. I'm here with Dan. We are two of the teaching pastors here at Life Fellowship Church. And this is Life Talks, where we talk about a lot of things, theology, Bible, contemporary issues, and all about how we can follow Jesus in our lives. And Dan, obviously we weren't planning on talking about this issue, but it's interesting because I think we recorded an episode last week that talked about the decline of the Western Church. And it's almost like, here's an example of why things are failing. If you're not sure what's happened, I think it was Saturday evening or Sunday evening.
Late Saturday evening,
the story broke about scandals within the Southern Baptist Convention. And this is not, we're not throwing dirty laundry around. I think we're here to have a conversation because whenever these things happen, it shakes people's faith. It shakes people's you know, it makes people question what's going on. And so let's just first start, Dan, with can you summarize what this report came out and said and where it came from?
Sure. So first of all, let's be upfront. Neither you nor I are or ever have been Southern Baptists.
Correct.
So we both come from Baptist backgrounds, but we did not come from the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yes.
So we see this from the outside looking in, which I think gives us a little more objectivity. So over the last several years, the Me Too movement has also gone into the church and taken a look at occasions when men in power abused women or exploited them sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people started coming forward in a variety of churches with allegations that said, not only was I as a woman mistreated or even abused, sometimes assaulted by a man in authority, often a pastor or an assistant pastor or a leader in the church, but then the church didn't deal with it when I came forward.
Mm.
They covered it up, and in some cases, they would send a pastor to another place. So when the accusations were made, they were largely received with a, no, you're mistaken, initially, and then as well, if it happens, it's rare. And then eventually it came to the point where we deal with that internally. There was also another series of arguments that basically said, well, we're not an actual denomination, we're a convention, mm-hmm. therefore we don't have authority to get involved in individual churches. So there's all kinds of excuses that were made, and it's been bubbling up. And a couple of members of prestigious positions within the Southern Baptist Convention started making the issue even greater.
Mm-hmm.
One of them being Beth Moore, who was mm-hmm. a ladies' speaker of great reputation, who was a member of Southern Baptist Church for many years. And then another guy by the name of Russell Moore, who was a prominent thinker and part of the Southern Baptist Convention. And eventually, to make a long story longer, they both resigned from Southern Baptist churches in kind of protest over the cover-up. So it kind of came to a head last year.
Yeah, during their annual convention. Yeah.
And a proposal was brought from the floor of the convention that demanded the senior administrative body, which is called the Executive Committee in the Southern Baptist Convention, to launch an investigation and to publish how they responded to these actions. So the attorneys who were doing their job, quite frankly, I don't like their job. I find a lot of what their practices are legally right and morally reprehensible. But they basically said, oh, no. You cannot talk about this because if you do, you bring liability upon the organization.
Mm.
And if you bring liability upon the organization and we don't protect you from it, then we're guilty of malpractice, all of which is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so the executive committee took the advice of the attorneys and said, no, we'll not have an investigation or any investigation we have will be kept private. And so then there became another tussle that said, oh, no, the executive committee works for the convention at large. We voted this, that it has to be done. You must do your job. So when that happened, about half the executive committee resigned, and all the attorneys, the major attorneys, resigned as well.
I remember that last year when that happened.
And said, we won't be a part of this because this is going to invite lawsuits. But they went ahead and they did an investigation with a group called Guidepost who mm-hmm. do these kind of internal investigations. So this is the report that they issued on this last weekend that was with their findings. In their findings, they said that not only were the allegations were true, they were understated.
Mm.
And that there were major leaders in the Southern Baptist Convention in years past who were either accused of sexual impropriety or who had covered sexual impropriety. Mm. Multiple past presidents of the Southern Baptist Convention. In fact, that there was a database of sexual offenders that they were keeping that they did not let be known publicly. And in some cases, some of these guys were allowed to transfer from church to church to church, and on occasion, with the assistance of leadership in the Southern Baptist Convention, to be able to take new churches without ever having the problems from their previous churches exposed. Mm. All of this was done over a period of many, many years, and it was done using a rationale that said, if you take this to court, it is going to damage the reputation of Christ, it is going to harm the advance of the gospel, and it's going to create significant financial liability to the organization. And so using these rationale, they were covered, they were ignored, they were shifted, but they were not dealt with. Mm. They weren't dealt with biblically, and they weren't dealt with legally. Mm. And so now the genie has escaped the bottle. The
chickens
news is out.
Chickens have come home to roost.
So the names are out there now. They're in the report, almost 300 pages of data, including emails that were confidential at one time within between members of the executive committee. And now the lawsuits are going to start happening. Mm. And it has the potential. Some people are people calling it a nuclear bomb, and I don't think that's an overstatement. It has the potential to do to the Southern Baptists what has happened to the Catholics and to the Boy Scouts of America.
Yeah,
it can bankrupt them.
Yeah, I've heard, I think the article in the Christianity Today when it came out was, this is the SBC's apocalypse, essentially.
Yeah, I saw that, and it really is. And that makes me terribly sad because there are many great people in the Southern Baptist Convention. There are far more great people in the Southern Baptist Convention than there are ornery people and sinful, wicked, covering people. At the same time, which is, I think, where we're going to go in this conversation, this is part of a pattern of unbiblical behavior that God apparently has finally said, you know what, I am sick of this, and I'm going to let it be dealt with publicly.
Yes. The next question I have for you is, and we talked about what this is, the next question I have is, how and why did it happen? And I think, you know, we talk about the Catholics, the Boy Scouts, in smaller ways, probably because they're more spread out, but the Independent Baptists all had these very similar, I mean, it's almost like this, you know, replace the title of who's in charge. It's the same story.
Yeah.
And Ravi Zacharias.
Yeah. The Assemblies of God had rocked in the 80s.
Yes.
With Jim Baker and Jimmy Swaggart.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that, like, this is nothing new. It's just a different tribe within, church tribe within Christianity, doing the same things that these other religious groups have done. Why is this happening? What's the way of thinking that allows this kind of practice to happen?
That's a very complex, it's a very simple question. It's a very complex answer. and I even approach my response with a huge amount of trepidation because, you know, we've got 12 and a half minutes left in this episode, and there is no way that I can deal with it fully. And I don't want to inadvertently diminish or leave something incomplete, but I'm going to give it my best shot to say this. First of all, institutions are born dying, and they become fundamentally corrupt. Mm. Name one institution, one government, one organization that eventually did not stray from its founding values and basically collapse upon the weight of itself.
Yeah.
Part of the reason is the institution becomes more important than the mission, and it becomes more important than the foundation.
Mm.
And the reality is that even in religious organizations, and let's use the Southern Baptists in particular, they developed a machine. Mm. And you know, what started with a few good men started a movement, and the movement then developed into a machine. And the machine, you know, eventually will collapse like a monument with day and time.
Yeah.
So what we've got here also is, and this is where I want to be really, really careful. You can't interpret everybody's actions based on today's culture. The culture has shifted. It needed to shift.
Yeah.
But inasmuch—
You're not excusing it. You're just saying this is the reality of it.
Okay. And so I'm old enough that I remember this culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was actually trained in this culture. I rejected a lot of it, but and some of it I rejected more slowly than I should have, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. But let's go back and use the example of slavery. Mm-hmm. Today, what we're doing in many cases is dismantling the leadership of this nation, the founding fathers of this nation, because some of them owned slaves, mm-hmm. And because some of them did not actively and proactively fight to get rid of slavery.
Right.
Some of them actually compromised and said, okay, well, we're going to allow slavery in these circumstances, even if they were personally opposed to it. And so forth. So now, 200 years later, 200 plus years later, we can't interpret their actions based solely on this. Was it wrong then?
Absolutely.
On matters of right and wrong, yes, it was wrong
then.
Right.
That's right.
And it's wrong today.
That's right.
However, you have to understand that during that time, they did not possess the power of a majority to be able to deal with it. So they tolerated it, not saying that it was right.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, they were just simply personally blinded to
it. Yeah.
And
I mean, you look at the differences, you know, Thomas Jefferson writing what he wrote about, and he even wrote about the evils of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote about how this is such a pox on our nation.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, because of his financial needs, he couldn't get rid of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not excusing it.
John Deere wasn't there.
Yeah.
Right? And so they used human beings.
Yeah.
We look at that and we say, oh my goodness, but they didn't have John Deere and Alice Chalmers and all the other
machines. It's not an excuse, but there is this complexity to humanity.
And we rationalize our sin. They rationalize by saying,
absolutely.
Well, their life here is better than
that's
it was previously.
Yeah.
Now that we give them somewhat of an education, they have a roof over their
heads.
And so they make these, were they wicked, wrong rationalizations? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But did they buy into them? Yes. And it calls us to ask, what rationalizations are we buying
that's
in
right.
today? And I would use abortion as one of them.
Yeah.
But what rationalizations do we buy in today to permit things that are heinous before
that's
God?
Right. That's right.
So we all know that the back at the founding of this nation, women weren't allowed to own property.
Mm.
Then they weren't allowed to vote.
Mm.
You know, and in many cases, you know, even in my lifetime, the respect toward women has dramatically shifted in the right direction, a positive direction. But many of these guys are guys that were in their 70s and 80s and even older. Some of them are dead now that were involved in these decisions. And they had been trained in a system that was wrong, that was wicked. But the system was this: nothing is more important than the reputation of the church, singularly, and also the institution.
And
the
leader.
And the leader. And particularly if the leader fell, they felt like, well, this wasn't just about him. It was also about the church that he led or represented.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, and ultimately, we're protecting the reputation of Christ. Now, I literally heard this argued. I've seen this happen when I was a kid, when I was a teenager. I saw them dismiss people at night and have them clean out their office, and you never heard from or saw them again. And in other situations, not where I was personally involved, they would pop up again in another church.
Mm.
And it was like, don't ask, don't tell. Don't ask them what happened.
Yeah.
Or there's rumors, but we don't talk about rumors because we don't gossip. And so they took off and repeated it time and time again. In other cases, they said, well, you know, they're under a lot of stress, or they would blame the victim.
Mm.
This was big.
It's the
because
worst.
And then they would start quoting different passages of Proverbs and Psalms, like, she was the seductress. Well,
oh.
You know, it was his fault, but she has to take responsibility too because she dressed seductively, or because you know, she came to him in the evening, or she came and met with him privately in his office. So they blame shifted when, you know, a pastor has a high calling and a high responsibility to protect himself. And, you know, this is what really ticks me off. Remember when Mike Pence was vice president?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I won't have dinner with a woman alone.
Right.
And I won't.
Correct.
And oh, they just, and he called it the Billy Graham rule.
Yeah.
Billy Graham had the same rule. Billy Graham, if he was on an elevator and a woman got on the elevator, he'd get off the elevator. And the reason was he could not afford to have even an accusation.
That's right.
Nor could he afford to put himself in that position of
that's
temptation.
Right. That's right.
So, and when they said, well, that's sexist, that's this, that's that. No. That's wise.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys made a wise decision. And today it's being proven out, even though nobody's going to go back and apologize for the horrible things they said about him.
Yeah.
But in the end, we live in a complicated world. And there are women who are seductresses, and there are men who are animals and who are
predators.
Violators or predators. And we have to be, we're all human, we all sin, We're all flawed. And we also have a responsibility to treat sin right on an individual basis and to address it and to deal with it and for the consequences to come fully upon people, regardless of the damage it does to the institution.
That's right.
Yet, there was a day in time and in history where the argument was made and people were convinced that if it meant that the institution's reputation was protected, therefore allowing more people to hear the gospel and resources to remain, assigned to the missions and mm-hmm. gospels and so forth, mm-hmm. that this is how we handled it internally. We handled it discreetly. They yeah. would use scripture to say things like, yeah. If anybody, is at lawsuit, don't take it to the authorities, handle it internally,
yeah.
which is not in effect whenever civil law is broken.
That's right.
So all of these things have combined to create this storm. Nah, it's not even a storm. It was a petri dish in which this bacteria grew and took root. And eventually we have the tragedy of women who were abused, exploited, raped, seduced, violated, diminished, demeaned, lied about, lied to, and by the men in authority. Mm. Who in an atmosphere that could only be described as the good old boys club
yeah.
protected each other at the expense of these victimized women. And now, as you said very eloquently, the chickens have come home to roost.
Yeah, so I think what we have to do is, I think my response to this is we just have to mourn that this has happened. And even though it's not our church and it's not our denomination, I think the reality is this gives the Church of Jesus Christ a black eye.
Yeah.
You call yourself a Christian. Most of the secular world, they don't care if you're Catholic, Baptist, or charismatic.
Yeah.
When they
you're religious, yeah.
When they hear this happening within the church world, they lump us all in the same. And when they keep seeing these patterns, what it does is it gives just an incredible black eye to the name of Jesus and to the glory of Jesus. And so it makes me personally mourn when I hear about these kinds of things. But I think what you have said, it should awaken our senses to our own ability, like you said, to excuse and dismiss our sin. We can look at what these people have done in authority over the last few decades in the Southern Baptist Convention and just be appalled and disgusted and mourn. But I think one of the takeaways for me is we all have the capabilities of doing that on a much smaller scale within our own hearts.
Yep.
And we've got to really understand, we can have a proper response to what's happened, but I think we have to look inwardly to say, how am I confronting that in my own life?
Right.
How am I confronting my own mindset when I bring this into my own life? And so
I would also add to this that if you are in a position of authority, you have to be doubly careful, not only to guard yourself, but you also have to be doubly committed to doing the right thing regardless of the consequences. Mm. Sometimes doing the right thing comes with a downside.
Yes.
In this case, doing the right thing may have caused headlines. It may have caused people to be scandalized. It may have caused financial reparations to have to be mm-hmm. issued to people. At the same time, So they covered it up, justifying that. But at the same time, it was also an opportunity that failed. They could have modeled biblical
yes.
confrontation. They could
yes.
have modeled
yes.
spiritual restoration.
Yes.
They could have modeled submission to government
yeah.
authority. One of the, the scripture says, "Smite the simple and the smite the scorner, and the simple will be aware."
Or, yeah.
Smite the scorner and the simple will be something or other. I want to say aware, it's not the right word, but basically be warned.
Yeah.
And for us, when you see somebody get caught and have to pay the price for being caught, it's a warning to all of us.
Mm.
What makes you think? But when we see people get away with things, we think, well, maybe I can get away with it too.
Yeah.
And so it feeds the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And we have a responsibility as leadership, you and I as pastors and as elders, but whatever your church ecclesiology is where you have people in authority, you can't think more importantly about you can't hold an elevated status the financial stability or the public reputation, and you can the individual story and circumstances of the people that you serve.
Yeah.
And that's where we cannot lose sight of that. In
yes.
doing so, we cause greater harm and a corruption of the foundation.
Yeah. I think I've got a bunch of questions here I want to ask, and we're almost out of time. So here's what I think. Let's just pause our conversation right now. Let's pick it up next week or next episode. And a couple questions I have to ask is, what does this say about the church? What does this say about God? And how do we move forward? How do we as a church move forward in this kind of climate to make sure that we don't have that culture? Mm. I think it's vital that we are committing ourselves to not falling into the same trap, because as you said, you know, there's an old proverb that says the cover up is worse than the crime.
Yep.
And how many times have we seen that, right? I mean,
Watergate was
I was just thinking Watergate is the perfect example where the cover up is worse than the crime. And it always happens in institutions. It just, like, there's always human nature that says we can get away with this.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that a little bit more next week.
Well, that makes me want to make sure I tune in next week on Life Talks.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. I know we've just begun this conversation. I don't want you to lose heart if you're listening to this. We live in a fallen world, and many times the roots and the fruit of sin show up within places that should be the most holy. And I want us to understand that says more about our fallen human nature than the power of Jesus Christ. And we need to remember that. And so let's continue this conversation next time. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll talk to you next time on Life Talks.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well. So leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.